The information presented in this podcast is intended to be for entertainment and educational purposes only. It should never be used in place of advice given by a mental health or medical professional or as a substitute for mental health treatment. If you're struggling with a mental health issue, please seek professional help.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Fangirl Business.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Krisha. And today we are going to continue our conversation about the 11th episode of Supernatural's 15th season, The Gamblers. And now it is time we turn our attention to the subtext.
Yay! So we're going to talk some casting, some Dean cast, some Destiel. This was a subtle episode, but it was there.
It really was. That special story within a story situation, I feel like, continues.
It really does.
I know we talked about Dean and his growth and the things that he did to show that he was going to do things differently after the prayer to Cass. So we got into some of that in our textual episode. But I think we can explore that a little bit more here, because I think if you look at it through the Destiel lens, there's a little bit more there. The first thing I noticed is that yet again, Dean was in a situation several times where he, in the past, absolutely would have been flirting with, hitting on, picking up women, and he didn't bat an eyelash. So nope. He's at a diner with this waitress bending over the counter, which is totally his play. That totally would have been his jam. And then at the pool hall, the same thing. He's at the bar with the cute bartender. And in both scenarios, nothing. Just like not a single thing.
Dean has always had a very flirty personality. That's always just been a part of who he is. He's charming, he's outgoing, he's flirty.
I think it's hard for a guy that has the charisma that he has to actively not flirt with someone. He's attractive and he knows it.
Oh yeah.
And he uses it to his advantage. So for there to be such a distinct lack of flirting seems awfully purposeful.
Yeah, and that's an ongoing theme that we've been noting for many episodes now. The first one that we noticed it was Proverbs with Ashley.
Not Lilith.
It's been an ongoing theme where he's not engaging in that way. And that is unusual for Dean Winchester to not casually flirt.
Well, and usually if they're going to be around beautiful women, if Dean isn't flirting with them, then Sam is. And we've talked so much about how Dean and Cass have paralleled Sam and Eileen, and Sam didn't hit on anyone this episode either.
No.
And he was there talking to that bartender quite a bit, and it just wasn't that.
No, he's too into Eileen.
I know, but it's such a shift.
Yeah.
That's just not what we've seen. It was kind of purposefully absent. It was kind of loud in its absence, I thought.
Yes, I think that's a really good way of putting it. Sam's too into Eileen. He's not going to look anywhere else. It's really cute. And then that begs the question, who's Dean into? If we're paralleling, which they have been this whole friggin'
time. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about the section where Fortuna says that Dean is a beach read. And he has this reaction, which, I mean, you think of Tolstoy, you think of dense fiction, right? He says,
beach read. Lady, I'm Tolstoy.
So it's like a boom, drop the mic moment, right? But apparently there is more to Tolstoy than him being a very great literary mind. Both in his diary and in his autobiography, which is called Childhood, Boyhood, and Youth, he talks about the fact that he had attraction to men. And he repressed, but it states that he was attracted to men because of their physical beauty, but he was also attracted to women because he admired their spiritual attributes. So
what does that mean?
I know, right? It's not really clear if he's bisexual or if he's a gay man, but he had a horrible, awful marriage.
To a woman, yes?
To a woman. Oh, yeah. And by the end of his life, he had totally sworn off of sex and felt that it was one of the reasons why Russian society was falling apart, and he really references negative stuff about homosexuality. So this was a man who is deeply, deeply, deeply in conflict with himself.
I was reading a little bit about him, and it seemed like when he was younger, he was a big womanizer as well. So hung out with prostitutes a lot. And I guess he had negative feelings about that later in life.
Sounds like he had negative feelings about everything towards sex later in life.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad. But I think it's really interesting that out of all of the authors they could have mentioned, they mentioned someone who definitely had a crisis going on with his sexuality. Mm-hmm. And who does that sound like?
Deeply repressed with a sexuality crisis. Yeah. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so food for thought, definitely. And again, if it was just once that they threw down these meta references that you have to dig a little bit for, but once you do, there's all of this stuff underneath the surface, then you could be like, it's just a one-off. That was coincidental. Mm-hmm. But the sheer number of things that they're layering on with the meta with Dean, especially this season, I feel like you can't ignore the fact that they're slowly but surely sort of forming a picture of what's going on here. What are your feelings about that?
It's always hard to tell if we're seeing what we want to see, because sometimes the subtext is so far down the rabbit hole. But I think that this season we're also getting stuff that is very obvious and very blunt. And so that sort of makes me see it a little bit differently. Are there details like this that could just be coincidental? I mean, sure. I don't know. But there are things that are not, I think, coincidental. So I think that it'll be fascinating one day when everyone sits down to do interviews and maybe puts out there what they were thinking at this point.
I would love to sit down with the writer's room and just be like, spill. Okay, guys, just spill. Like, tell us how much of this was planned. Please, please tell us how much of this was planned. That is my greatest dream at this moment in time.
Oh my gosh.
Is to just like sit down in a room with all the writers and be like, okay, I'm going to ask you all the questions about the subtext. Please tell us finally once and for all.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh, that would be just so fun. And fascinating, honestly. There's so many details that go into this show. And I think that this show, more than any other that I've seen or been a part of, is much more detail-oriented in terms of they make very sure that the details are tight and that everything is leading to this overarching story.
Yes.
But is it humanly possible to be aware of literally every detail? I just don't know. I just don't know, Catherine. I don't know.
And this is the problem with subtext.
Exactly.
Both the problem and the joy. The possibilities are this razor's edge of joy and anguish.
Right.
Then the other thing that I loved that was definitely a call out for Dusty L people was the moment when Cass yanks the lock off of its hinge.
When I tell you that I cackled.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. When we talk about the special story within a story just for us, like last week, Dean was impressed by Garth's strength and noted it three separate times.
Very strong. Come on, get us out of here.
Let's roll.
So strong.
that, like, oh, he's so strong. And
I just snorted so hard. We talked about how in fanfic, a frequent trope is that Dean really enjoys being manhandled by Cass. So he has a strength kink. They know us. They were playing on it with the Garth thing. I mean, that whole dab episode was on the nose. Everything was on the nose. So for them to do that this week...
It was a lock. One of the things that Garth did specifically was he broke a lock with his hand. And Dean was like, wow, he's so strong. And so then this week they just, happened to casually have Cass break a lock with his hand. And I just couldn't stop laughing.
Same.
Like, okay. Well, the other small thing that they sort of threw in there amidst several other callbacks or symbols was the handprint on the wall.
Yes.
Behind the sheriff, while Cass was talking to the sheriff, that certainly seemed purposeful. And I mean, that one's a tricky one, right? Because technically, textually, that's a piece of canon, like a big piece of canon, is the handprint that was on Dean's shoulder when Cass gripped him tight and raised him for perdition. It's just that knowing Destiel is a thing that has also become a symbol of that piece of the fandom.
Yes.
Because that's where they met.
That's the start of their profound bond.
Right. So it's like, is that a subtext Destiel call out or is it just a text call out? Probably both, I would imagine.
Well, it just seemed like a very odd thing. People were really confused, first of all, by that handprint moment, because it was really obvious and really standout.
Yeah.
And they framed it in this really obvious way. And there were some people that thought that Cass saw it and some people that thought Cass didn't see it. And I saw some people were arguing that it must have been Jack who got shoved up against the wall and braced his hands against the wall. Or maybe it was the Grigori marking his territory or something. But if it had been meant to be a main plot point that was pointing Cass to the presence of the Grigori or Jack, you would think that we would have seen one of them making that print. And we didn't. So to me, it was one of those in the background call out moments, which to me points to Destiel, because that tends to be what they use those background images for, is to point to something Destielish.
That's true, because they had a lot of callbacks through the episode with the Grigori and the discussion of the rabbit paw and Cass's badge flip.
Yeah.
But this was the only one that was truly in the background. That wasn't interacted with or directly part of anything. It was just there.
And the odd thing about it was the right palm was very obviously the call out to that, because the hand print that was on Dean was the right hand, which makes sense because in Christian ways of thinking, the right is the favored side. And that's why left-handed people like me used to get really, you can't use your left hand. It's the bad hand.
I didn't know you were a lefty.
I am a lefty. Yeah. So it makes sense that Cass would have gripped him with his right hand. But then there's another palm print.
Right.
And that doesn't fit. It's always been the solitary palm print. So we were talking last night and trying to figure out what it was. One of the theories that got raised was from our friend Sarah. And I think that she actually had a really interesting Destiel related idea. Do you want to talk about what it was, Krisha?
Yeah, she basically said that the handprint is reference to Destiel, but having two handprints next to each other sort of brings up the idea of a matched pair, which made me just squee a little bit. That's my headcanon now. I've decided that that is my interpretation, yes.
I really liked that one. And to me, the idea of being paired up in completion and holding hands and touch and all of the things that are implied by having them paired really fit. I'm wondering what it's foreshadowing. So, what does this mean for the two of them? And can we expect more profound bond stuff to happen? Because, I mean, that moment when he pulled Dean out of hell was the moment where the profound bond was formed. Castiel touched Dean's soul and pulled him out. So what does the idea of a second handprint mean? They talk later about how Castiel was lost to us when he first laid hands on you. Laid a hand on you, yeah. That just sounds all kinds of dirty.
Well, I was going to say, direct quote from Misha Collins from Jacksonville when someone asked him if Cass and Dean were going to repair their profound bond. His exact response was, he believes there will be bondage. So...
Of course he said that. It's so Misha.
No, it's an interesting concept, though. I mean, I think you and I are going to record an episode over the hiatus theorizing a little bit about what we think may be to come. And so mm-hmm. I think we might play with that mm-hmm. there.
A little bit more. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've just got to say that I'm still not over that lock. I mean, I know we already talked about it. But like, every time I think about it, I'm like,
they did a thing, and it was
perfect.
It was, and it was subtle but blunt all at the same time. Just amazing.
So, speaking of subtle but blunt, I totally missed the Agent Lizzo thing. You're all like, Agent Lizzo. And I was like, what? So I literally had to go look up Lizzo songs when we were taking a break during recording so I could be current and with it enough. And I was like, oh, yeah, I've heard these songs before. Yeah, exactly. So hip. So with it.
Well, it's Lizzo's music is very much about breakups.
Yes, like, it is.
Like valuing yourself and walking away. I saw so many fandom edits where her music was put over the Dean Cass breakup scene. I just saw her being associated with Cass so much during that phase.
Hello,
Cass.
Sam's been trying to call you. I know.
Did you check his messages?
Nope.
Right, smart. Why would you?
God, Chuck is back on the board.
So, watch yourself.
And check your damn messages.
You're supposed to hold me down. But you're holding me back, and that's the sound of me not calling you back.
And so when he said Agent Lizzo, I lost it. I just cracked up because that's another one of those subtle, blunt, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. So we know what Cass was listening to on the radio while he was in that little cabin in the middle of nowhere.
Are you a lone boy? Come get me down, boy. Got a boy with degrees, a boy in the streets, a boy on his knees, he a man in the sheets. Sheesh, it's all Greek to me. Got this boy speaking Spanish. I hit puppy.
I cannot get that visual out of my head. First of all, just that Cass goes out of his way to listen to pop music.
I feel like the first time he used one of those pop ones, it was sort of accidental. And then mm-hmm. he just leaned into it and kept going with it. And now it's like he's just embracing the thing.
I always thought it was just he would Google musicians and it would come up with the most popular ones, the most famous ones, this very like logical way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And now I see it totally differently. And I'm like, oh, my God, he's out there listening to Lizzo. Post breakup.
I know we did you wrong. We can make it right. So go and let it all hang out tonight.
Processing his feelings and finding his strength and walking his fine ass out the door. And it's amazing. I just love it.
It's so wonderful.
The reunion scene, man.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a lot there. We've talked a lot about how you and I read Dean and Cass, mm-hmm. but Jack's been gone. So we haven't really talked about how you and I have interpreted their relationship in terms of parenting.
Yeah.
So it might be worth spending some time on that, actually, before we even get to the reunion scene, to try to set it up a little bit. Because we've talked on the podcast about how we met, but I think we were being a little general about it. You and I started talking on Twitter. Was it after Mariah? Was it after the season finale?
Yeah, it was. Or? It was 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And I was still screaming about it to the rafters because I was just so proud of Cass. I was so proud of him. Mm-hmm. He always defers to Dean. And I say always, I mean for seasons and seasons, he had deferred to Dean.
Yeah.
It didn't start out that way, but that was the pattern that they fell into. So for him to be given a choice to fall in line or walk out the door and walk out to go find Jack was huge. Anyway, so I was squeeing about that and you saw it and came and squeed with me and it was awesome.
Yeah, and I think we quickly discovered that we both read their relationship as more than friends. Mm-hmm. We bonded over that too. So it was very much a excitement over Cass and his parenting decisions. Mm-hmm. But it was also over our deep love of Dean. Mm-hmm. And we were frustrated with the choices that he was making because
they weren't good dad decisions for Jack.
Right.
Yeah.
And they weren't really good relationship decisions for Cass.
Yeah.
He wasn't treating Cass well. He wasn't talking to Cass. He wasn't talking to anyone. He was just talking at everyone, basically. And so we were just very frustrated for him, you know, with him, but also for him. Mm-hmm. In season 14, we saw each of the boys, Sam, Dean, and Cass, start to really form that deeper relationship with Jack. Cass bonded with Jack when he was still in the womb. Mm-hmm. And then there was that dark period that I don't like to talk about when Cass was not... it's not around.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's not an okay time.
Nope.
My face looked much like Dean's at that point. Yep. After Jack was born, Cass was gone, and Dean didn't cope with that well. And so Sam was the one that bonded with Jack.
Yeah.
And Dean hated Jack, mm-hmm. honestly, mm-hmm. because he felt like he was responsible for Cass's death.
As a kid, he go dark side yet?
Nope. He's pretty messed up, though.
You telling me?
No, Dean, he's messed up because of you. Dean, you said you'd kill him.
It wasn't exactly like that.
Then how exactly was it?
I told him the truth. See, you think you can use this freak, but I know how this ends, and it ends bad.
I didn't.
What?
I didn't end bad. When I was the freak. When I was drinking demon blood.
Come on, man, that's totally different.
Was it? Because you could have put a bullet in me. Dad told you to put a bullet in me, but you didn't. You saved me. So help me save him.
You deserve to be saved. He doesn't.
Yes, he does, Dean. Of course he does.
Look, I know you think that you can use him as some sort of an interdimensional can opener, and that's fine. But don't act like you care about him, because you only care about what he can do for you. So if you want to pretend, that's fine. But me, I can hardly look at the kid, because when I do, all I see is everybody we've lost.
Mom chose to take that shot at Lucifer. That is not on Jack.
And what about Cass?
What about Cass?
He manipulated him. He made him promises, said paradise on earth, and Cass bought it. And you know what that got him? It got him dead. Now, you might be able to forget about that, but I can't.
So then in season 14, we finally got to see Dean really, really bonding with Jack. Mm. Dean's been a mentor to just a ton of kids.
Yes.
Over the course of the show. But this one was different. He was a dad.
Yeah.
He really was.
Yeah.
And above and beyond that, he was a co-parent.
Yes.
I feel like we really got to see Dean and Cass specifically co-parenting, because they would give us these scenes where they were checking in with each other on the kids. Mm-hmm. Jack, but also kind of Sam. You know, Dean raised Sam.
It's true. Yeah. There were a lot of really cute co-parent moments with Cass and Dean.
There was this scene, they were talking about Sam and how he wasn't okay after the Hunters died. And then they were talking about Jack and how he wasn't okay because of the soul stuff. Cass is like, you need to talk to Jack, which is like super co-parenting kind of game plan. And Dean's like, yeah, Sam says he's okay, but he's not okay. And he's bound and determined to be hunting. And so Cass is like, all right, well, you need to talk to Jack, so I'm going to go with Sam. And Dean's like, well, he's not going to talk to me.
How's it good? Well, he says he's good, but what about Sam?
He says he's good. I think they're both full of crap.
Hey, found us a case. Arkansas.
We've just done 3 back-to-back hunts. I need some rest, at least a night. We both do.
Yeah, well, I'm leaving at 10.
Like I said, not good.
Maybe I should go with him. You can stay with Jack.
Why?
You were right. Jack is struggling. And I've tried,
but... Why do you think he'll talk to me?
Well, because he looks up to you. And his soul, I mean, you've seen this before.
No. See, I was not great with Sam, you know, when he was,
Yeah, but Jack's soul isn't completely gone. At least I don't think so. We just don't know how much is left.
Well, how am I supposed to figure that out?
I don't know. Just talk to him. Get him to open up.
We've talked about how I've had these conversations, and I'm like, yep, I totally had that conversation. Oh, I don't know. It's your kid. You got to go figure it out. Well, he's your kid, too. You know, like, well, I tried, so now it's your turn. You know, get in there. Buck up, buttercup. Get in the fight. See what happens. They're splitting up the household emotional duties. I just thought it was perfect.
Yeah. In terms of connecting with Jack, I think it was Sam first because he identified with Jack because of how Jack was born with this darkness in him, just like Sam had this darkness put into him with the demon blood and how he overcame what he was supposed to become somebody very different. And so he believed that Jack could be more than his genetics and the role that Lucifer wanted him to play. And he was right. He was the one to first connect. And then after Cass came back, then he connected. And then finally it was Dean. And when Dean finally connected with him, it was so beautiful.
It was just magical.
It really was. Jack knew that Dean didn't want him around at first. And it hurt him. He understood, but he'd never done anything. So it was hurtful. And so when Dean finally embraced him, Jack looked up to him so much.
He did.
And he would listen to Dean before he'd listen to anybody else, really.
Jack. Hey, whoa.
Easy.
Just having a bad dream.
Sorry.
It's okay, you don't have to apologize. I have them do all the time.
You do?
Sure.
What do you see?
Well, it depends. Mostly people I couldn't save.
Me too. Over there in the other world, I said I'd protect those people, but I wasn't strong enough.
Jack, it's not about being strong. Look, I don't know what you saw over there. I don't know what you went through. I know it was bad. But I also know that you came out the other side. Because you are strong. But even when we're strong, man, things are gonna happen. We're gonna make mistakes. Nobody's perfect, right? But we can get better. Every day we can get better. So whatever you're dealing with, you know, whatever comes at us, we'll figure out a way to deal with it together. Your family, kid. And we look after our own.
And would be convinced by Dean more than anybody else. I mean, the moment where he's driving baby and he's like, this is the best day ever.
He's so sweet.
I know. And it was because he knew how much Dean loved Baby, and so he loved Baby as much as Dean loved Baby, and he was getting to drive Baby, and Dean was approving.
Okay. All right. Keep going. Look.
Good. Okay. Look, you know what? I'm not very good at this.
No, you're doing just fine, okay? Try using one foot, not two. And, just relax. Take it smooth. Don't overthink it. Here we go.
Okay.
See? Huh?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Whoa, let's keep it in between the lines.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
All right. Feels good, doesn't she?
Yeah. This is the best day ever!
You know what? There's nobody around. Why don't you open it up a little bit? Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh?
I mean, it was just so precious.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
The relationships that everybody had with Jack, and then especially the co-parenting that happened between Cass and Dean. I mean, it was all so amazing. But we haven't seen that this season, like you said, so we haven't really talked about those relationships in terms of Jack. Cass was the only one who stood by Jack through all of the stuff with him losing his soul. And after Mary died, he never stopped believing in Jack. And so we knew that he was going to reconnect and rebond instantly. But we didn't know about Dean. And there's this really beautiful moment that happens between Dean and Cass during that reunion scene with Jack.
We talked about that scene in our last episode, and there's a lot to it. It was just very directly related to the prayer scene and the things that Dean admitted to and the changes that he's committed to making. But I think that now that there is their kid involved, when you start talking about relationships with kids, but you now bring romance into it, whether they're canonically together or just pining, it still adds just this deep, deep, deep extra layer, right? Because their issue last season that led to all of this explosion, all of this drama, was about their kid.
Yeah.
And disagreements over their kid. The relationship between Dean and Cass, when it comes to Jack, I read it as just being a lot more weighted. This isn't just about, oh, what are you going to do with regards to Jack? Because we all love Jack. It just seemed way bigger than that, way more weighted than that, which wasn't there with Sam, which in my mind is because I read Dean and Cass as romantic. I see them as together and raising a kid. And Sam's involved too, but it's just different dynamics. So, and I felt like the prayer scene set it up. And then this was the thing. He's confronted with Jack. Cass is standing by Jack. Cass is saying, here he is. This is him. What he's doing is okay. There's a reason for it. And they had a whole conversation, like a whole 27 million hour long conversation in that 2 second glance. Dean goes over and he puts his hand on Jack's face and he gives him that searching look. And then he looks to Cass. Which, after the prayer scene, is just huge. He's trying to read the situation. He's trying to connect with both of them. And man, that had to be hard for Dean.
Yeah. Really hard.
I can't imagine.
Because, I mean, as hard as it was for Sam, Sam only has memories of his mom as an adult. And for Dean, he had this lifelong idealized set of memories of his mom and always wanted her back and was given that gift and then had it taken away by his son. So it was an incredibly huge moment for him emotionally in a ton of different levels. When it came down to that moment of how is he going to react, you know, that I get so angry and I don't know why moment just didn't happen. It was like that glance with Cass grounded him and helped him to do what he needed to do to accept Jack in completely. And when I say that there were giant hard eyes on Cass,
I mean, like, it was, oh my gosh, like the amount of emotion that that man put into his eyes.
It was just such a soft look on Cass. And he knew that Dean was going to do the right thing. Just like he didn't hesitate with Jack, he didn't hesitate with Dean. He trusted Dean to do the right thing. And that took real courage on Cass's part. So the amount of trust that was going on between all three of these players in that moment was immense.
Yeah, because I think Cass was nervous. I think at first he was.
Of course he was.
That's why he held back for the little reveal. And he couldn't even talk. He couldn't speak. He couldn't say anything. All he could do is step to the side and show them and then put all of his emotion into his eyes.
Cass?
Hey. Everything okay?
But that's the Dean Cass thing, right? That's how they communicate best. It's through those long gazes.
I mean, accurate.
Goodness.
I loved that he was nervous, but he trusted Dean to do the right thing. He wasn't afraid that Dean was going to draw an angel blade and try to smite their son. He wasn't afraid that Dean was going to do something that was going to wound everyone there. He didn't try to take Dean aside before and break the news.
Yeah.
You know?
That's true.
He trusted that he would do the right thing. And I think he was nervous as heck, but he trusted him anyway. And Dean proved that that trust was justified. And I was so proud of him. That moment from the breakup scene where he said,
"You used to trust me. Give me the benefit of the doubt."
I feel like he gave Dean the benefit of the doubt here. And then Dean returned that in spades and was like, "You think he's good? Okay, I can do this. If you believe in it, I can believe in it too."
It's not just that Dean was accepting Jack being back. It was accepting that he needed to kill these Grigori and eat their hearts. You know, I mean, he was presented with a lot of information.
That was the second check-in moment when they were all sitting around the table in the war room. And he's talking about eating these hearts. Dean looks over at Cass like, "Is this actually cool? Are you okay with this?" And Cass doesn't say anything, but is like, "We're good." And he's like, "Okay."
Jack, you ate their hearts?
I had to.
And you let him.
You could have called us.
You can see this whole silent conversation. I'm so married happen.
I know.
It's making a decision, making a conscious decision to ask the question and then to take the reassurance and trust the reassurance. That's huge. And again, not to blow up. It would have been so easy for him to blow up over Cass bringing Jack on them like that.
Yeah, in the bunker. I mean, yeah, he brought him home without checking in first. That's a big choice.
Big choice. Dean could have reacted to it very poorly. And to me, it was an active choice that he chose not to.
The level of vulnerability for Cass, because when you have two parents and the other parent is not getting along with the kid, there's that one parent that's in the middle, and it's the absolute worst place to be. I've been there. It's absolutely horrifying when two of the people you love more than anything are on the outs of that level. It's awful. It truly is. Yeah, I was feeling for Cass in that minute. You know, I'm sure that Dean has a lot left over from that last interaction with Jack. He did ultimately at the last minute remember who Jack is. He finally was able to get past the anger back to, oh, right, this is Jack. I love Jack and Jack is a good person. I mean, even without a soul, he made the right choice. And man, soulless Sam did not do a lot of that. He had to be told what to do by Dean. Jack did it on his own, really. He had support from Cass, but he was doing it on his own. I feel like Dean remembered at the last minute, but Dean has spent the last several months just blowing up all the time because he hadn't dealt with what he did with Jack. He hadn't dealt with all of those feelings. It's all of that stuff with Belphegor that we talked about, where he was so casual about accepting Belphegor, and talking about it. And I know. So he had the confession prayer scene with Cass, where he was able to recognize some of the stuff in the relationship with he and Cass. And obviously that transfers to Jack. His anger doesn't just come out at Cass. It comes out at lots of people, including Jack. But he hadn't really processed these feelings about Jack yet that we're aware of. He's been doing a lot of growing, but we haven't seen that. So that was that other layer of he got there with Cass. Is he there with Jack? Mm-hmm. You know, has he let himself go there with Jack? Has he let himself think about it, talk about it? Yeah, it was just a really complicated emotional situation. So I was just extra, 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 extra proud of him that he was able to react in the way that he did, being trusting and being in the moment and ultimately just being willing to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Whether he's completely on board with this angel heart business or not, and he may not be, just because he looks at Cass and is just like, okay, doesn't mean he's fully convinced, but it means he's willing to listen. Yes. It means he's willing to keep going. And that's what's so important. I'm so proud of him.
I mean, he is. He's doing so well. We've been waiting for this to happen for so long, and it's happening.
I'm so happy.
I know. It's it's kind of overwhelming, really.
I know.
Like,
I know.
That it's happening. He's really, really making these huge strides. Like, when Dean Winchester goes for it, he goes for it, man.
He does. And he is.
Big ways. Most people would be taking baby steps. To be so measured in the face of what he must have still been feeling. Like I said, when Dean Winchester goes for something, he goes for it. He is ready to make change in his life.
Yep.
I'm proud of him. It's going to be exciting to see what happens next. How are we feeling about the state of Destiel after this episode?
That's a good question. I'm not happy that we have reached this point and Cass's deal with the empty has still not been addressed.
Yeah.
Because I wanted that to be addressed early on so that I could stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
It's a fanfic type idea, which usually I would then discount, but we keep getting those this season, which is the idea that the reason that Cass would finally be happy is because he and Dean finally admit their feelings to each other.
Yep.
And then he would go to the empty.
I mean, I've literally read those fics accidentally and been like, no, I didn't want to read this. What? And it's horrific.
Uh-huh.
Horrific. I don't want to see that on the show, man.
I know.
But I do, but I don't. Like
it's almost too obvious, but they keep doing those things that were like, oh, that's too perfect. That would never happen. And now I'm like, oh.
It's a horrible thing to want your character that you love to find true happiness and be terrified about it at the same time.
Because right now, obviously, he's not happy because even though he and Dean are okay now and he has Jack back, God is still a threat. You know, the people that he loves are still being threatened. So, of course, he's not going to be all the way happy. But then if you look at that from a storytelling perspective, how is he supposed to be all the way happy while there's still a big bad out there? And they can't defeat the big bad before the end of the show. I have concerns.
They would not do that to us. They would not.
I can't believe that they would. I mean, every part of season 15 is driving towards a hopeful ending.
Yes.
It's all about hope. I'm not concerned that Cass is going to go to the empty and then it's going to be the end of the show. I'm not concerned about that necessarily, but I can't figure out how it's going to play out, and that's stressing me out.
Yeah.
Like, I can't see a way through, and it's concerning. Jack is sitting there at the table and he's talking about what Billy's making him do, and I'm just like, tell us about the empty. What did you come up with the empty? Did you get Cass out of his deal with the empty? Poor little Nugget is sitting there horribly traumatized, and I'm just like, but talk about the empty.
And he can't anyway, because he promised that he wouldn't say anything to Dean or Sam.
In terms of Destiel and my thoughts on it, I don't know if it's like text versus subtext or if it's logic versus feeling. Every time I get to the end of an episode, I'm like, okay, the story doesn't seem like it's obviously going in that direction. It's obviously going there with Sam and Eileen, and there are obvious parallels and things like that, but it's not a classic romantic tale. But then you and I talk and we get into the minutia and we see how much is there. And then I'm like, damn it. Are they doing it? I don't know.
I know.
And I guess at the end of the day, I just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's going to be that story within a story that's going to be just for us, or if they're really going to go big, because they're going big with a lot of stuff. I just don't know.
I can't tell. Is it going to be the story within the story? Is it going to be the subtext? Is it going to be the music that alludes to things that are deeper than just friendship? Or are they going to go big and address things like they have with Sam and Dean's codependency and the need for found family and growing as fangirls and what it means to be a writer and hope
and a hero. Yeah.
Yeah. They've been hitting all of these really big things very directly and addressing all of these problems.
Oh yeah. Like the legacy issues. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this would be one of the big legacy issues. The problem of
representation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I keep waiting for them to take a next step though. And I haven't seen the next step yet. And so I'm wondering if that's part of what's happening after this break. And part of me is, am I being too hopeful, or am I putting too much on the writing team of my own expectations, or is this reasonable? And I don't know. I feel like it's reasonable. I feel like this is a reasonable thing to hope for, because so many of us are hoping for it. And they seem to be addressing the things that so many of us have hoped for in so many different aspects and avenues of this show. If you'd asked me a year ago if Sam was going to end up with anyone, I'd say, well, there doesn't really seem to be anyone that would be the right pairing for him. I mean, it would have been Eileen, but she's dead, you know? And now he and Eileen are head over heels for each other, and only Chuck is messing that up.
Stuff changes. Yeah. Changes quickly.
It does. Within the span of a few episodes, it went from her not even being a possibility to them kissing in front of the stairwell.
Mm-hmm.
So I continue to be hopeful. I continue to be holding on to hope. But at the same time, I'm stressed out about the fact that they haven't given us that big stepping stone moment yet. Taking it out of the story within the story to taking it just to be the story.
Yeah, I feel like the prayer got close.
Yes.
And it set up the next step. They didn't get a chance to talk face to face, but it's set up. They will do that and they get a chance, kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't seen it yet.
I know. They just need that 10 minutes alone in the bunker.
I know. Please.
Yeah.
Send Sam away. Send Jack away. Just...
all they need is 10 minutes, man. What is it? A lot can happen in 30 seconds. Like, a lot can happen in 10 minutes on a show like this.
Very true. Mm-hmm. 10 uninterrupted, not being hunted. God doesn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Interrupting Moose doesn't walk in. You know, let them finish a freaking conversation for once. Please.
Yes. Yeah, I think the next couple of episodes will be very telling.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It'll be episode 12 when we come back. Mm-hmm. So we'll only have 8 more episodes. And I think that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for them to play with this anymore. So I think we'll get a sense within the next 2 or 3 eps.
Yep.
Fingers and toes and everything crossed.
Yep.
And living in hope.
Yep, yep, yep.
Because that's where I choose to live.
Right. Exactly. That's what Supernatural has told us, is to always have hope.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's the perfect note to end it on.
Yeah.
You. You're awesome. So I think we will wrap it there for this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. And you can message us and stay up to date with the latest on our Twitter page at TheFangirlBiz. That's B-I-Z or B-I-Z. And we'll see you again next time. Until then, carry on, wayward friends. We love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, just kidding. That wasn't the end. So since we've recorded this episode, I have become something of a Lizzo addict. And I've been listening to all of her music. And I discovered this wonderful song of hers called Heaven Help Me. And every time that I listen to it, all I can think of is Castiel in his cabin in the middle of nowhere in the woods in Wyoming, listening to this song and holding onto the hilt of his angel blade and using it like a microphone and belting out these lyrics. So I needed to share that image with you as well as this song. So here you go. Enjoy. This is the actual end of this episode. Bye. You're so cute. Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking in my kitty voice. She's mesmerized anytime I go into a higher pitch. It's the funniest thing. She's just like, oh, you're speaking in that voice that you only speak to me with. It's your special kitty voice.